You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like Songa, man, my song's gon' break through like a running back.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. Today is Monday, March 18th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly. Welcome to a very sunny and quiet Monday evening, a couple of days away from the first day of spring here in the Northern Hemisphere, and it has just been glorious weather here in Vancouver, Canada for the past couple of days. All right, a bit of a different show tonight. We're going to talk all about the Australian Grand Prix, because on deck we have good friend of the show, Stuart Bell, to go over all the latest news for this weekend's Australian Grand Prix. It's been kind of all over the schedule the past couple of years, so I feel like we're almost rebooting the season in a sense, because it occupied that opening slot of the Formula One calendar for many, many years. Anyways, before we welcome Stuart to the show, I'd like to give a shout out to the Race Weekend magazine. You can find them at theraceweekend.com, and that is RACEWKND.com, and use my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout to save 10% on a year's subscription. And also check out racingexclusives.com for one-of-a-kind, unique Formula One memorabilia that comes complete with a certificate of authenticity. All right, and as promised, we're going to jump right into it, because joining me once again this evening is FIA-accredited journalist Stuart Bell. Since 2007, Stuart has written for Formula One, Motorsport Magazine, GP Racing, Esquire Middle East, and currently Stuart is the producer for The Inside Line, which is a weekly television show 100% dedicated to Formula One and is broadcast in over 110 countries around the world. You can also find The Inside Line on YouTube at The Inside Line HQ. Stuart, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back. I always look forward to chatting with you each and every year when the Australian Grand Prix comes online. It's just a little bit kind of confusing, because it seems each and every year we talk, in the last couple of years anyways, we haven't had an Australian Grand Prix, or we have, and it's sort of shifted around a little bit from its traditional spot where it occupied the opening race of the season for ages and ages and ages. But be that as it may, we're back in Melbourne this weekend for the third round of the 2024 Formula One World Championship. And before we talk about the Australian Grand Prix specifically, Stu, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the first opening, or the first couple of races of the season.
Sure. I mean, I think Red Bull and Max Verstappen certainly, restarted where they left off from. And I think there's been a sort of a shortage of action up front, with Max so dominant in the RB20. But it's been great to see Ferrari coming forward to be snapping on the heels, certainly, of Sergio Perez. But, it's been difficult to see Mercedes not unable to really sort of get a grip on these regulations and falling back into the midfield. But there's, chance to see, McLaren still doing well and moving forward. But, I think it hasn't been the blockbuster season start that we had hoped. We hoped in this sort of third year of the F1, the new era regulations, we'd see a much closer fight. But unfortunately, it hasn't been. So hopefully with the weather, looking a little bit sort of changeable with some rain in Melbourne for this weekend, that might, change things up and give us a much more of a chaotic race. Maybe even like we saw last year, which was absolutely ridiculous in terms of the amount of action, 3 red flag periods and all that, 12 on the finishing lap.
Yeah, that was quite something, those last couple of laps of the race last season. But you were just saying, you know, just talking about some of the other teams, your Mercedes still struggling to figure things out, and McLaren maybe not as well. They're at a different place where they were this time last year, but maybe haven't picked up to start this year where they left off last year. I know that sounds a little bit confusing, but, you know, my concern about it is that we... You know, Max has been so dominant again the first couple of races of the season, and sometimes I worry they're almost teasing us. And I feel that if Ferrari's able to eke out a little bit more performance out of the car, if McLaren's able to maybe close the gap a little bit more, that Red Bull will still be able to stay at arm's length from them, no matter what the rest do, because they've just been so dominant, and the car has been bulletproof as well. I mean, they've been so reliable, just like Mercedes were, you know, previously in the, you know, from 2014 to about 2021. And, you know, you have a fast car with a great driver and reliability like nothing else. It really is, you know, it's a winning package, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. And, you know, congratulations to them for putting that together in terms of, you know, evolving that package to be, you know, even further ahead in terms of, you know, especially in the race. But, you know, I think it's good that Ferrari was good on qualifying pace last year, and they were sort of really, it was much closer battle in qualifying. And I think, you know, the fact that they've sorted their race pace, they're not getting the same sort of tire deg that we saw last year, that bodes well. So if McLaren, they're preparing an update for either Miami or Imola. So, you know, potentially they can make the same stride as they did last year. It's a big ask for them to do that. But I think, you know, it certainly bodes well, especially if we can get some changeable conditions to mix up the order and give, you know, the fans in the stands something else, someone else to cheer for. But certainly it's an impressive run that Red Bull are on, and they do look bulletproof, and they are storming as they, you know, as Mercedes did before them, as Ferrari did before them. You know, it's an impressive run of form.
It really is. I crunched the numbers, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, over the past two seasons compared to the first two seasons of the V6 turbo hybrid era, starting in 2014. I know it's different because there are fewer races then compared to now. And, you know, it wasn't quite apples and apples. But I mean, just sort of statistically comparing the numbers, you know, one-on-one over that the same period of time that, you know, the numbers were superior for Red Bull compared to Mercedes. And whenever I think sort of any time starting in 2014 and moving forward, it was just Mercedes dominance. And it wasn't over several seasons, but even when they were dominant, they weren't quite as dominant as Max has been. I mean, it's been absolutely remarkable the run that he's had over the past two plus years.
Yeah, I think Saudi was a much better race than Bahrain. I thought, you know, it was a faster track and there was a little bit more competition through the field. Bahrain was a little less exciting in terms of, you know, there wasn't a lot of racing through the field, and Max had that huge gap, a 22-second gap over Checo in the first race. But you're right, you know, I mean, I remember being at that first race in 2014, and Mercedes were, you know, light years ahead of the rest of the field. And you know, so, I mean, I think, you know, Max is catchable and Ferrari is certainly making inroads. The fact that, you know, Sainz could challenge Leclerc with it, at least be within a few seconds in Bahrain was good. And, you know, I think there's certainly plenty of other narratives throughout the field. I mean, it was great to see Ollie Bearman, you know, replace Sainz out with appendicitis. And to be able to move from 11th up to 7th, you know, to show what he can do. I mean, it's good that we've got other things to look at while the rest of the field picks up its pace to take on Max.
Yeah, that Oliver Bearman story was a real great, you know, thread to really follow the entire weekend, because, you know, poor Los Carlos Sainz, I mean, he really is trying to audition for a seat next year, and there's a couple really juicy ones available. We all know that there's going to be a seat available at Mercedes, and we'll talk about Red Bull in a moment, because Daniel Ricciardo ties in nicely to that conversation. You know, and poor old Carlos, here we are a couple of races into the season, pardon me, you know, has to sit one out. because of appendicitis, which, you know, I was thinking that that never happens. But then what was it, 2022, you know, Alex Albon knocked on the door and said, well, it happens a little bit more frequently than you think, metaphorically speaking. But just really unfortunate timing for Carlos. And, you know, I hope that this weekend when he gets back, that, you know, he's not hampered too much, because, you know, even if he does race this weekend, that is a, you know, a nasty bit of work, and, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time to heal.
I was amazed that he even could race or even do practice, you know, with appendicitis. They thought it was food poisoning to start with. He was apparently fine in the restaurant on the Thursday night. And then, yeah, then it just, it was onset during the Friday. But, you know, I've had appendicitis, and you know, the pain is excruciating. So he must have just been able to put himself in a different place to get in the car. But, you know, we saw a vision of him walking out of the paddock, to, you know, to leave for, to go and have surgery. And he did not look, even walking looked very, very difficult for him. So I think he was putting on a pretty brave face. The guy is, you know, an absolute professional. And so, you know, dogged determination. So it's very impressive. So, but if he can get back in, I mean, Alex Albon was back in for the next race in Singapore after missing Italy. So, you know, and that's an incredibly physical race. So whether, hopefully Sainz will be back for this weekend in Melbourne, but obviously they know they've got a capable reserve if he can't.
That's right. And so we've just talked about Alex Albon, and that kind of ties in a little bit as well, because when he sat out that race for appendicitis, he was replaced for that one off by Nyck de Vries, who scored a point, you know, in that outing for Williams. That helps Nyck get a race seat last year with AlphaTauri. That, of course, didn't work out. And your countryman, Daniel Ricciardo, gets that race seat, you know, does a handful of races. You know, it looks fairly handy for a guy that sat out, was it 8 or 9 months, you know, not having a full-time drive coming into the 2023 season. So that is a significant amount of time to miss for a driver, but does, I think, a fairly good job, pretty good job missing that time. Has that unfortunate smash in the wall at Zandvoort. And I watched that again not so long ago, and the irony in that that accident was that that was his, you know, it was Oscar Piastri that has like a little moment there, and then it's a Danny just comes into the corner and just doesn't want to smash into the side of Oscar Piastri's McLaren, and then misses, you know, another 2 months or whatever it was. But where I'm going with this is now that, you know, Dan's back again this year with Racing Bulls, or whatever we're calling them, seems to change by the week. But he's the one name that really gets thrown out there a lot for that potential seat, assuming that Sergio Perez will not come back next year. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on Dan. I mean, that story I thought was really nicely covered in it made for great, you know, a great theater conversation, whatever you want to call it, in the latest drop of Drive to Survive. You know, I think everybody loves a good underdog story. I think a lot of people love Daniel Ricciardo. You know, he's been sort of that larger than life figure, but how do you think he's done since he's and it's not like he was away for a long time, but in this latest iteration of Daniel Ricciardo, how do you think he's done so far?
I mean, you know, he's done an okay job. I mean, you know, he's a capable driver. He's a multiple Grand Prix winner, eight wins he's got under his belt, and he's been a strong driver, you know, from the outset, you know, from his Toro Rosso debut. But, you know, his performance this year to be outqualified by teammate Yuki Tsunoda is not good. He needs to be putting Tsunoda in his place at each and every round if he's to have a chance at replacing Perez. I mean, I think, you know, as long as Checo is coming home second to Verstappen and winning when Verstappen can't, then he's doing the job that Red Bull needs him to do. That's the job he wasn't doing last year when he had his wobble after he was destroyed in Miami by Max, and then just started having all those crashes and fight-back drives. But, you know, so it's Sergio's to lose that drive. But for Dan to be put in the top team again, he needs to be overwhelmingly, bringing the top performance to be promoted. And at the moment, he's not showing that. He had a spin late race spin. I mean, he had a 41-second pit stop. Let's not forget that that really put him behind. But he's not. He needs to be out qualifying Yuki, and he's not. We saw the news from Helmut Marko giving him the hurry up. Now, whether that's politically motivated or not, who knows? But the fact is that Dan, you know, he's not doing enough. He needs to be, putting Yuki to the sword. And so Melbourne this weekend, you know, is a chance for him to come back. He spoke in Saudi Arabia of the fact that there were some flaws in the car that they need to fix. Now, if that, you know, hopefully they can get a hold of them, whatever they are, they need to be fixed, and he needs to be on form, because if he, you know, if it's a brutal business, Formula One, and if you're not bringing home the results, you know, you're not deserving of the seat.
So just reading between the lines, Stu, when it comes to Red Bull and that second seat beside or behind Max Verstappen, do you get the vibe from Red Bull that they want Dan to be that guy, or are they just kind of looking for, you know, the modern day, this era's equivalent of, say, Valtteri Bottas, who's going to be a capable number two driver who's going to, you know, bring home Max points all the time, maybe occasionally gets a race victory? And I almost feel bad for Valtteri that one time when Toto, you know, said the quiet part out loud and said he was the ideal wingman to Lewis, and you know, walked it back. But you know, what are your thoughts? Do you think that you know, quietly that Red Bull want Daniel in that car, or is it just basically whoever's the best complement to Max?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, you know, they've got great memories of Dan delivering in that car alongside Max. Obviously, he's got a great relationship with Max. There's a lot of camaraderie there. He's great for their marketing. But, you know, he needs to deliver. And that's what they need. They need the points. They need first and second in the championship. And with this kind of car, this RB20, it's the class of the field. And so, you know, Red Bull should be coming home one and two in each race. Obviously there's, you know, factors that can change that, so that, you know, it's not possible to score first and second in every race. But, you know, on paper, that's what should be happening. So, you know, Dan needs to be showing them that to even be considered. And there's great, you know, for Christian Horner, he's a big fan of Daniel Ricciardo. The whole team love Dan. They, you know, there is a lot of great memory there. But unfortunately, if he's not producing the performance, then he won't be considered. But, you know, it's all down to him. And, yeah, there's definitely goodwill on both sides. You only have to look at Dan being given that test at Silverstone, and then, you know, I think after, what was it, 7 laps or whatnot, he was given the green light for the second AlphaTauri seat. So obviously they believe in him, but it's up to Dan to deliver. He's the loveliest guy in the world. He is exactly what you see on television, genuine, you know, kind and good word for everybody. But, you know, he's had a couple of tough years, and it's now for him to get out there and deliver on home turf. And if he can do that and continue to do that, then and shave Yuki, then there's no reason why he can't go back to the top team.
You know, I must admit that, you know, dialing it back now to 2018, I still remember the morning I was in summer vacation with the family, and we were staying in a hotel, and I just remember walking out front, waiting for everybody to come out so we could start our day. And I was sitting down in the sun, and I was, you know, going through, you know, social media on my phone, and I still remember to this day, you know, Dan's video saying he decided to leave Red Bull, he was going to go to Renault, and I always thought at the time, I was like, geez, I don't know if this is going to be the best move for your career. And it just, it's unfortunate, because I can, on one hand, I could see why he did it, because, you know, it was pretty obvious then that you know, Max is this once in a generation talent and you know world champion in waiting, and you know, and Daniel, of course, as you mentioned, you know, had a whole bunch of race wins and podiums to his own credit, you know, that he'd added to his resume. So why not? I mean, he was going to be the number one at a team, and Renault, I mean, let's face it, I mean, on paper, this should be an organization that can you design and build and deliver a world championship caliber car. They've done it in the past, and you know, frustratingly over the past decade in various forms as Renault or Alpine, they just haven't been able to do it. You know, kind of had a couple of bright spots in that COVID season with a couple of podiums, and then moves on to McLaren, and that was a bit of a frustrating experiment too. And you know, and as I say, I mean, Daniel's like one of these guys that, you know, I can't help but root for him for all those exact reasons that you just said, that he is exactly the way that he appears on TV. I mean, he's genuine, and you know, he's warm and outgoing, and I think that really endears him to a lot of people. So, you know, personally, you know, like I said, I always like a good underdog story, but I'd love him to be able to put a, you know, for him to pull it off. But having said that, yeah, well, please
just
go ahead.
Before you go in, I certainly would too. Love to see him do well. He's a great guy. But, you know, I think just continuing on from the 2018 leaving Red Bull, I mean, he'd been promised title campaign after title campaign. And, you know, they'd already started the year behind the eight ball. And then obviously Max was on the rise. There was also the question of Honda coming in. They'd not delivered with McLaren. So there are a lot of unknowns, and whether the you know, Red Bull was on a path to imploding. You know, that I think there was more to it than just Max coming in and being the having the team built around him, although that was obviously happening. But Dan could easily take the, you know, the fight to Max. But it was, I understand why drivers leave teams where they've been brought up. But the same happened with Fernando. The same happened with Lewis leaving McLaren. And sometimes you need to explore pastures anew. But it obviously didn't work out. And, you know, I think he learnt a lot. He also earned a lot from Renault. So, you know, I think he'll be fine. But, you know, there is a lot of pressure on him to up his game for Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point too, because you certainly reminded me of those dark days of McLaren and the Honda partnership about a decade ago, and it really took them a couple more years to really get Red Bull in at a position to be the world championship team that they are. I mean, they just needed that power unit to go with it.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
But to sort of building on that, you know, just that theme, you know, so Dan is obviously one of those guys in the conversation with that, you know, that second seat. Carlos Sainz has to be another one. Who do you think might be a likely replacement, or, you know, and we're all in it. This is where I feel bad about Sergio Perez, because I feel that, you know, half the time a lot of us are writing his like Red Bull obituary, and, you know, I'm sure Sergio would say, well, I'm not done yet. I'm still here. I'm still trying to get the job done, but it's been pretty tumultuous. Or is it just a little bit too early to say? Do we have to sit back maybe for another, you know, half a season and see where the, you know, where the equilibrium kind of, you know, where everything settles?
I mean, the reality is the talking will be already going on in the paddock, and you know, and contracts will be sniffed out in terms of who's available when. I mean, both Carlos Sainz and Alex Albon are both ex Red Bull pilots. Know the structure of the company. I mean, there are obviously rumours of Red Bull reaching out to Alex. He's been rejuvenated at Williams, and he is on the rise, and he's proven himself to be a team leader. Likewise, with Sainz, won the only race, non-Red Bull win last year in Singapore. You know, he's not as quick over one lap as say Charles Leclerc, his current teammate, but is you know, a brilliant strategist in the races we saw at Marina Bay last year. But yeah, I would say Albon will certainly be a top pick if Perez doesn't do the job. But you know, I think they've said it's Sergio's seat to lose. And, you know, the fact that he's been 1-2 at the start of the season, you know, bring home the 1-2 results for Red Bull is testament to his pace. But he has to keep that up for the rest of the year. And we saw him win two of the first four races last year and then fall off the wagon. So, you know, anything can still happen in 2024.
Yeah, and it really is incredible. I mean, how often do we see, like, a seat at a top team, you know, come open? But with Lewis moving over to Ferrari, and then just the expectation that people seem to have that number two seat at Red Bull is open as well. I mean, I don't remember a time where we had, you know, two seats at two top teams open at the same time, because they always seem to be locked down no matter who those, you know, those 1-2 top three teams are. It's always like, well, you know, well, so-and-so has been linked to a move to whatever team it might be, and it's like, well, no, Drebon guys, it's not going to happen. So that move that Lewis made to Ferrari was a real shock, and you know, I think, as a friend of mine said, that is kind of setting us up for perhaps the silliest of silliest or silly seasons this summer with the driver market. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, absolutely. 13 drivers out of contract at the end of the year. You know, I think it depends on what's happening at Mercedes. Will they put Antonelli in there? Will he have the points to step up to F1? His F2 campaign needs to fire. You know, after the opening two rounds in Saudi and Bahrain. But you know, if he is put in a junior team like Williams, which is not guaranteed, then that gives, you know, perhaps Alonso a chance to go there to Mercedes. And there's certainly, you know, plenty of other opportunities through the field to have drivers switching camps, whether it's Nico Hülkenberg, who's proven, you know, an incredible force at Haas, coming in after 3 years out of that cockpit. Is, you know, there's certainly lots of energy behind it. And it really makes, I mean, this year, to have no changes between seasons for the first time ever, with no rookies coming in, it'll be a completely different ball game next year. And you're right, it will be probably the silliest of silly seasons. And I think it's something we'll all welcome, especially if the action on track has not been that exciting, but the intrigue off it has been relentless and, you know, astonishing.
I've got another question for you now, because we've spoken quite a bit about Daniel Ricciardo, but he's not the only Australian driver on the grid currently. You know, Oscar Piastri from McLaren is the other. But before we talk about Oscar and the season that he had last year, I just want to get your take on this. So his manager is Mark Webber, who I think was perfectly summed up in his choice of social media handle at Aussie Grit. I think that's the perfect way to describe it. But my question to you is: Does Mark Webber conduct himself as a manager the same sort of mentality as he did when he was behind the steering wheel of a racing car? I would assume yes. That's just my guess.
Absolutely. He and his wife, Anne Neal, both very shrewd dealers in the paddock. And, you know, I think that's what you need, is someone who's going to knock down the doors and have the conversations. Mark is incredibly well connected in Formula One at the top end or through the paddock, and knows everyone. So that's what you need in a manager, is someone who can, you know, as I said, knock down the doors, have the conversations, keep that, you know, the profile up, you know, when, especially when times are down perhaps. But, you know, the other thing is that Piastri's been doing the talking. You know, he's been delivering the results against Lando Norris, and, you know, to out-qualify him and out-race him this year, despite, you know, Lando being on the, you know, I mean, Piastri was on the prime strategy in Saudi, and Lando gambled on staying out, which didn't work out in his favor. But I think, you know, Piastri has just been so consistent. Quick, he's been, you know, searing pace in qualifying, and very mature and cool in the race, and that's really, you know, hallmarks of a champion. He's three straight championships in the junior categories, and so he's very polished. And when he comes in and shows that polished performance in the top flight, he's signed with McLaren until 2026, but no doubt he'll be on the top team shopping list. You know, because he's just a quality racer, and to have Mark banging on in the paddock, just reassuring everyone, will just add to his strength as a you know, prospect moving forward.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy to watch last year, because, I mean, being a rookie was one, and then number two, the McLaren their car last year didn't start the season all that great. It wasn't a very strong car until they got those massive upgrades at Austria at the beginning of July, and then all of a sudden it was just like, wow, where did these guys come from? But not only, and I mean, of course, Lando being the more senior driver got them first, but as soon as Oscar started getting these upgrades and had similar performance with his car, the conversation very quickly became, okay, well, hang on a second. This Oscar Piastri guy is pretty darn good as well, especially for a young rookie. And, it's a real, pleasure to watch. And then, you know, especially as you were saying, just going back and talking about Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks ago, watching Oscar, you know, getting his elbows out with Lewis Hamilton, I thought was great to watch, because you have this young up and coming driver against the 7-time world champion that, you know, he gets the GOAT title thrown around all the time. And I thought it was great to see that, Oscar doesn't seem to be fazed by that. It's just like, let's go. I want a piece of this guy.
And that's, yeah, as I said, the hallmarks of a champion. You know, he's calm under pressure, and to have, you know, it's that's the mark of that's what you need to be a top flight in F1. And he's serious. He's not a joker. He's very serious and determined. And, you know, to be faced with a difficult car at the start of last year, and then have that come around and be able to fight for, I think he had two podiums, then two in the sprints and one sprint win in Qatar. You know, it shows that what he can do when he's capable of it. And he stayed cool and calm when he had a difficult car at the start of the year. And it just shows that he's capable of the results, and capable of sticking it out when it's tough. And, you know, and that's what a team needs, is that solidarity.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to switch gears here now, because we are talking, eventually getting around to it, at least, about the race this weekend. So recently, the race organizers have signed a new deal to keep the Grand Prix in Melbourne for at least another decade. So I was just kind of interested to find out what's happening around there. They reprofiled parts of the track last year. Are we going to see any more changes this year and moving ahead? Because, I mean, this is some time to put a bit of money into it if you're going to be hosting the Grand Prix there for at least another decade.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's signed until 2037, which, gives... you know, the stability for the Australian Grand Prix Corporation, for Melbourne. It's a big part of our major events calendar, along with the Australian Open. But I think that's really, they resurfaced the track, they reprofiled the corners. It's sold out. You know, to get a ticket here is virtually impossible at the moment, which is something that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I started, covering Formula One, you know, you could swing a cat around the circuit sometimes. And, but to have, a friend of mine wanted me to have a look into tickets for him, and I just went onto Ticketmaster and was like astonished at, every grandstand, even the general admission, which is called the Park Pass, now is very, very difficult to get. And I think there's only Thursday left. So there's huge demand for it. There's huge demand, post COVID, for events. But, you know, I think F1 has to deliver great racing. We saw last year that Australia was a chaotic race amongst, you know, some processional races, and that will keep the fire burning here. But really, it's up to, you know, up to F1 to deliver on track to keep people excited in the sport. But I think, you know, it's always great when the sport comes here. It's a change from being the season opener when everything was such an unknown. At least there's a lot of, you know, hype around who is where. We know where the teams are. We know who's leading. You know, we can really sort of, the local media can talk about what is actually going on, which adds to the sort of chatter ahead of the race. But in terms of further investment, I don't see anything, you know, as it stands right now. But you know, the track looks great. You know, it's full to the brim with hospitality and grandstand and general admission customers. And you know, I would say it would be on track for beating its record last year for attendance.
I know that the race organizers would hate to hear me say this, but if, you know, every time somebody asks me, what is the one moment that you remember from the Australian Grand Prix? And I'll always go back to 1986 in Adelaide with Nigel Mansell with the world championship on the line, and my dad being a big fan of Nigel Mansell, watching that race, watching his tire blow, I believe it was his right rear tire, and then his hopes for a world championship literally going up in a puff of smoke. And, you know, at the Grand Prix has been in Melbourne for so very, very long. But it's funny, though, when you get a memory like that, even going all the way back to, you know, that age. I can remember how old I was at the time. That's the one thing, like it'll always be that one memory of the Australian Grand Prix that will always come to mind. But, you know, having said that, now we have to give Melbourne their fair shot. So I'll pass it to you. If there's one moment or one race in Melbourne over the years, what would be one that stands out for you?
I mean, the iconic shot is the 1996, the inaugural one in Melbourne, where Martin Brundle did the barrel roll into turn three. That's the iconic shot. 2002, the huge, you know, crash multi-car pileup at the start. You know, Mark Webber getting fifth points on debut. You know, I think there's loads and loads of iconic memories over the years. Last year's race, though. I mean, being in the media center during the three red flag periods, all of the craziness that went on, who's going to be allowed to start, who's going to, you know, what's going to happen, you know, in terms of how the race is going to end. That was some of the most exciting time I've spent in the sport. You know, all the journalists just talking to each other going, what is actually going on here, and how is the race going to finish? After so much carnage, that was, I would say, that is one of the highlights in terms of, you know, racing at Albert Park. To have three red flag periods is insane. It's a record for F1.
I was just going to ask you that because they were also the race organizers were fined for that track invasion at the end of the race. What have they done to make sure there's no repeat of that this year?
Well, there's no one's allowed on the track after the race. So they've pumped up security in addition to that. But, you know, the scenes of huge crowds going down the main straight to fill out the area ahead of the podium won't be happening this year as a result, which is a shame because that was such a huge part of the end of the race. You would just see thousands of people down the main straight, you know, celebrating what a great race it had been. And that won't happen. But I'm sure in the future they might relax that and work out a stronger strategy. But to make sure that, you know, there's no further occurrence of it, at least this year, they've just made that change.
Yeah, that's a shame in a way, but, you know, safety always is paramount. So, you know, before we wrap it up, we talked about it very briefly at the beginning, but now it's time to, you know, you put it all in line here. So I'm going to ask you for a prediction, but, you know, as you mentioned, a twist sounds like some cooler, perhaps damper weather for the weekend. I think we can all kind of guess what the race prediction would be if it's a dry race, but any guesses as to, well, first of all, how likely is it that the weather will change for the weekend?
There's meant to be rain forecast for Sunday, I think between 5 and 10 mils. So that's, I'm not quite sure when that is, but there'll be rain during qualifying, for as far as I'm aware. And so that could put the the cat amongst the pigeons. And in that case, you know, you could see a driver like Fernando Alonso coming through, Piastri in the McLaren. Maybe the Mercedes might be able to you know, bring it further up. But even Ferrari, you know, if, for example, you know, Red Bull find an issue, you know, and can't get the grip in the damper conditions, perhaps we could see Ferrari coming up. And, yeah, Leclerc is, you know, arguably one of the quickest on the grid. So you could certainly see if there is chaotic weather, another non-Red Bull win and, yeah, potentially Ferrari, maybe Leclerc.
Well, it's let's keep our fingers crossed, because there's nothing like the unpredictability of a Grand Prix when you have a bit of less than ideal conditions for a race or a qualifying session. So I got my fingers crossed that it may come to pass. So Stu, before I let you go, finally, what do you have on the go at the moment, and also where can people find you online?
So I'm doing that. I'm the producer of The Inside Line. So you could find our work at Unbeaten F1 on all social medias. I'm doing some work for AP, Associated Press, and Esquire Australia, and looking forward to a brilliant Australian Grand Prix. If the weather's nice, even if it's not, it's lovely being in Albert Park. It's green and a beautiful place to watch Formula One.
Agreed. Well, Stu, thanks so much for dropping by today. Appreciate it as always, and best of luck and enjoy the weekend.
Thanks very much.
All right. Once again, that was Stuart Bell, and head on over to X and give him a follow at Stuart Bell F1. And that is Stuart spelled Stewart, Bell Bell F1. And that's it. That's a wrap for me tonight. Thank you for joining in and having a listen tonight. Please head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., and leave a 5-star rating and review if you enjoyed the show and what we're doing here. And head on over to X and give me a follow there at Scuderia F1 Pod. And if that's not your thing, then you can also send an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. That's it. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Bye for now.